Hello, everyone, and welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty.
Mark is joining us this week for another installment of the playback. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. Thanks for having me again.
This week has us looking into and reliving, doing a playback on the classic film, the classic comedy, The Blues Brothers, starring John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And I am pretty excited about this playback because this movie is outrageous for a lot of different reasons and in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I just want to say, guys, what is the playback? We've done a couple of these before, but we're actually going to change it up. We're going to make it a little more user-friendly for you, the listener, and actually us, the podcaster or the MC or whatever you want to say. We used to do like a scene-by-scene breakdown, and our podcast ended up getting like really bloated and I don't think as efficient. And we were just wondering, okay, if they've already seen the movie, why are we doing a scene-by-scene breakdown? So we are still going to talk about the movie, but expect less scene-by-scene meticulous breakdown. Expect more like questions about the movie, what we felt, what we thought, what aged well, what didn't age well, how, you know, those kind of things. So this is more of like a discussion of our impression after we watched the movie and also things we noticed during it. So that's how we changed this up. I hope it ends up being a little more enjoyable for you guys. And the other thing I wanted to say is that you need to watch The Blues Brothers before you go on.
Go watch it.
It would help
right now.
It would definitely help.
It will help immensely. I mean, I'm sure you'll still get a lot of enjoyment listening to us bullshit, but it'll make a lot more sense if you've seen The Blues Brothers. So, and we're talking about that original one, like Michael said, with Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi, not the one that was a piece of shit that was not remade, but it was like a sequel of sorts. It still had Dan Aykroyd in it, by the way. But Jim Belushi, of course, passed. So anyway, go watch that movie.
John Belushi.
Yeah. Yeah, who's Jim?
Jim's
his brother. His brother.
Like, according to Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. Jim Belushi. We know what we're talking about. I actually kind of like Jim Belushi. Just
yeah,
to throw that out there.
Yeah, it's a great sitcom.
Right, yeah. I think it's pretty funny. So I actually had Jim Belushi written down. That's why I was saying.
I'm changing it at the moment.
Yeah, so I'm going to blame these two for not changing that for me and just leaving it.
Our editors.
Our editor did not help me out there. But anyway, go watch the movie and come back and hang out with us after that. So that being said, our website, supermetalworld.com. This is kind of like a special type of episode we do. We primarily talk about like metal and hard rock related topics, and we interview like underground metal bands and sometimes signed metal bands. We do this episode type called According to a Non-Metalhead, where Danielle comes on and she's not really somebody who listens to metal, but we talk track by track about certain metal albums. Like last time we did Korn's Issues album, and we have blogs on our website too. Mark has written about the Hateful Eight, eight people that you should avoid at a concert for various reasons. I've wrote thought pieces on Howard Jones being better than Jesse Leach and Killswitch Engage. And I've also done a couple reviews of some underground metal bands. So anyway, we do a lot of stuff like that, but we also will step away from metal and do these kind of movies. We usually do comedies. And we also do video game stuff, too. So there's a wide variety of things we offer, and I think that you will fucking love it. So go check it out, supermetalworld.com. We're anywhere that you stream a podcast. Just search Super Metal World on Spotify or on iTunes. Please follow, subscribe, rate, and review. That means a lot to us. Gets our podcast out there. Share it with a friend. We're on all social media. You can like us or follow us there, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm ready to get into it, guys. Horns high.
Horns high.
So the Blues Brothers, this movie was released in 1980, June 20th to be exact. On IMDb, it currently holds a 7.9 out of 10 rating, and that's according to about 170,000 people who rated it. It's rated R, and it's over 2 hours, 2 hours and 13 minutes. What's with comedies and always being 2 hours long or more?
I don't know. I was
even
I
back
was
then.
Like, yeah. I was like, when I was watching the movie, I was ready for it to like be over. Like, it was like, oh, you know, like the Blues Brothers is about to end. You kind of feel like the final scene is coming, but no, it just like goes for like another like 30 minutes.
So, and also if you're wondering, comparing IMDb to Rotten Tomatoes, Rotten Tomatoes, the critics rated it an 84%, the audience a 92%. The user ratings, 255,000 people rated it on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's almost double.
Wow.
What IMDb has. So I think that's just interesting. Their little critic consensus is too over the top for its own good, but ultimately rescued by the cast's charm, director John Landis's grace, and several soul-stirring musical numbers. As far as what this movie is about, I'll read a little bit of summary because I'm assuming you guys have already watched the movie, which would be helpful. Stop and watch the movie now if you haven't. After the release of Jake Blues from prison, he and brother Elwood go to visit the Penguin, the last of the nuns who raised them in a boarding school. They learn the Archdiocese will stop supporting the school and will sell the place to the Education Authority. The only way to keep the place open is if the $5,000 tax on the property is paid within 11 days. The Blues Brothers want to help and decide to put their blues band back together and raise the money by staging a big gig as they set off on their mission from God, which is repeated a lot throughout this movie. They seem to make more enemies along the way rather than being helpful. And then the whole idea is, will they manage to come up with the right amount of money, or the right amount of money. You know what I mean? Well, they come up with that 5,000 by the time the movie's over. Movie stars John Belushi, not his brother Jim. So I want to clarify that. Also, is John the older one of the two?
Yes.
He's got to be, yeah.
Yeah.
So John, I was looking at his IMDb, and of course, he was in Animal House. That was released in 1978. That's the big one that everybody's going to remember. He has a couple of other appearances. He was in Saturday Night Live. I mean, that's a big deal. He has some other appearances that I wasn't as familiar with. But his last, this was released in 1980, but his last credited movie appearance as an actor was in a movie called Neighbors, which was released in 1981. Dan Aykroyd, on the other hand, of course, is still alive and kicking, and his IMDb is much more extensive because of this. He was also in Saturday Night Live. He actually wrote The Blues Brothers, and he was in a host of movies. You know, he was in Ghostbusters 1 and 2. He was in Spies Like Us.
Was he in Coneheads?
He was in Coneheads. He's been in a lot of things. He was even in Tommy Boy. He was like the big business guy in Tommy Boy.
Oh yeah. The break guy.
Yep. And so yeah, he's been in a lot of things. Appeared in a lot of like TV shows like Family Guy and such like that. So anyway. Iconic comedian, both of them really. So before I get like too much further into this, Michael, I kind of wanted you to talk about John Belushi and his passing, because I feel like that's important to mention before we like continue on.
Yeah. So John Belushi sadly died at the age of 33 in 1982. So just like 2 years after the Blues Brothers came out. Like Ty said, he was in SNL. He was actually one of the original cast members of SNL. He was a late addition after someone had like vouched for him to be like, hey, you should get an interview with this guy, John. And Lorne Michaels ended up loving him and brought him onto the initial cast. And again, like Ty was saying earlier, there was Neighbors and A Continental Divide, which were two movies that John had done after Blues Brothers, and they didn't do well at all. Like, John went from like top comedy guy, right, to, you know, down the, like, maybe not down in the dumps, but like definitely lost some credibility and some fame because of these like two shitty movies that he put out. So he was just trying to rebuild his career as like a comedy actor, and he had always struggled with drugs. Even I know, I think Mark, you're very familiar with like the history of SNL, but and like that first season, that first cast was just like insane, right?
Oh yeah, the first cast, which is Dan Aykroyd as well, Chevy Chase, obviously Jane Curtin, a big one. They like throughout the 70s and 80s, it was just the writing was all done on cocaine, pretty much, because sure. Such a, if you know the schedule of SNL, it's basically like pulling a lot of all nighters, and the show is created in one week, right? So the host of the show will come in on, I think it's Monday or Tuesday. They do read throughs, or not read throughs, but they pitch ideas right away. And then they're just writing for most of the week. And SNL is also a very competitive environment, right? Because only a couple sketches make the show every week. So all these writers are kind of working together, but they're also kind of competitive. And I think more in the 70s and 80s when Belushi and Aykroyd were there was more like backstabbing and you know, it's this, I don't want to say like cancerous culture, because obviously it was a super successful show, but it's
definitely like it's a toxic work environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, from what I've heard in interviews from like Seth Meyers and newer cast members, they said it's not like that at all. And really hasn't been that way since the 80s and 70s. Sure, so sure. Something to keep in mind. I mean, it was just the 70s in New York and the 80s in New York. It's just a lot of drugs, we'll say.
So John was no different. In fact, I think he was probably more so into drugs than a lot of the other cast members, because he was actually removed from Saturday Night Live by Lorne Michaels and then brought back on a couple times because of just these massive drug problems he was having. So you fast forward a couple years to 1980, when we've got the Blues Brothers coming out, and it's successful. And then John Belushi's on top of the world, right? One of the greatest comedians of that era. And he releases these two shitty movies that no one likes. So he wants to try to get back to, you know, stardom. So he's in the midst of writing a script for this film called Noble Rot, and all of his friends, his managers, all of the people that were kind of surrounding him, reflect and look back and notice, you know, like at that point in 1982, he was often like incoherent. His clothes were always dirty. He looked like he hadn't, you know, showered in several days. His apartment was completely, you know, disheveled all of the time. And I think he was feeding his drug habit, you know, very, very aggressively while attempting to get this script for Noble Rot written and to sell it to Paramount so Paramount could make this movie. But Paramount said, no, we actually want you to be in this other movie called The Joy of Sex. Belushi didn't want any of it. He kept pushing back Noble Rot. And then eventually, you know, we come to March 5th, or I guess it would have been March 4th, the day before his death. A woman named Kathy Smith was called to his apartment. She was like his occasional like drug dealer. And it's assumed that she had helped him to administer what's called a speedball, which is basically just a combination of cocaine and heroin. And, that happened. And then on the following morning, March 5th, his personal trainer, discovered him in the morning dead on his bed.
That's crazy.
So I think just like a ton of, I don't know if it was just like, I know he was living like a pretty heavy party lifestyle. I don't think it was necessarily exclusively the stress of writing the script and getting back into fame that killed him, but it definitely was part of it. He had very, it seemed like he had very few like restrictions, or he didn't, he was very easy to get into drugs, I guess. In fact, there was in the budget, in a Dan Aykroyd interview that he did with Vanity Fair in 2012, Aykroyd said that they actually had a budget in the movie for cocaine for the night shots, like all the filming they did at night, because I guess they can't film at night without getting all
our cocaine
high on coke. So they needed their cocaine to do those night shots. Even Aykroyd was part of it.
Wow.
But yeah, just like Belushi was extreme into hard drugs.
Yeah, and I mean, I know he gets a lot of comparisons to Chris Farley. And I will get into that a little later. But I was wondering, Mark, did you have anything else you wanted to add about SNL?
Not really. You know, just those, it's important to know that they were part of the first cast and obviously huge pioneers for the show and really comedy in general. And you just mentioned that Farley, it's really, like you said, we'll get into it later, but it's kind of almost eerie how both of them were very similar. And Farley's biggest hero ever was John Belushi. And they both, you know, two iconic SNL cast members, certainly both in the top 10, and they both passed away for, I guess I can't quite remember how Farley died, but I think it was overdose.
It was drugs.
I think it was definitely drugs.
Yeah. So it's kind of strange how they both passed away in a similar sense.
And they're both like burly guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big guys.
They were like surprisingly mobile.
Athletic big guys that used a lot of physical comedy.
Yeah. They're both very similar in that sense. And both were made to be on that show. I mean, they have very infectious personalities and both very talented. And Belushi, I mean, I've never seen this movie before, and I'd seen the Blues Brothers skit a couple times on Saturday Night Live, but so I knew he could sing a little bit, but yeah, he's a solid front man and very, very agile.
Yeah. I think that's important to note. I had also never seen this movie. Michael, did you watch this movie?
Yeah.
Before we watched
this? This wasn't the first time.
Okay.
For me.
So, I just want another thing that's eerie. Chris Farley also died from a speedball.
Well, there you go. Yep.
It said an autopsy revealed Farley had died overdose of cocaine and morphine. They called that a speedball. Did you call it something different?
No. Everything that I've seen has been, speedball is cocaine and heroin. But maybe heroin and morphine do similar things. I don't know. Never done a
cocaine
speedball.
Morphine, you mean?
Not big drug guys over here at Super Metal World.
Yeah, I mean, we're not doing speedballs. But yeah, they said Farley's death, obviously compared to his idol, John Belushi, because they both died with a similar combination of drugs. Wasn't exactly the same, but maybe there, like you said, there's more than one way to make a speedball. It says that if you look at speedball and what it is, it says it's a mixture of cocaine with heroin or morphine, an opioid, or sometimes benzodiazepine. It seems like it's cocaine plus something else.
Got it.
So anyhow, this movie, I mean, mainly, or the big stars you're going to notice, especially if you're like our age, like late 20s, is of course Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. There is like a Steven Spielberg cameo at the way end. We get a lot of like people that are big in the blues community. I think Aretha Franklin is in this movie.
Ray Charles
in this movie.
James Brown.
Yep. James Brown. Yeah, there's a ton. Chaka Khan, I think, is in this movie.
Yep.
John Candy makes a small appearance in this movie.
Yeah, there's a ton of cameos. It's kind of wild.
Yes. Carrie Fisher. We all know her. Star Wars. Rest in peace.
Joe Walsh is technically in this movie right at the end.
Yep. So anyway, I think we've kind of locked down like the stats about this movie. So I just want to get right into some questions. And my first question is actually for you, Mark. After your first watch, what were your thoughts?
Well, I was honestly really disappointed. I knew going in it was an iconic comedy, you know, and this is a movie, like I'd mentioned, that the it's a movie that, like, people will dress up as the Blues Brothers on Halloween, right? It's a very, I don't know if I'd say it's, like, prestigious in the comedy world. I would say on, like, a ranking of the top 100, it's, I don't know, it could be anywhere from, like, 40 to 60, 70, you know? So, I don't know, I set my sights really high, or expectations really high for this movie, and I don't know. I genuinely laughed maybe 3 or 4 times. And I was trying to break down why, and I think it's two reasons. I think one, the movie is 40 years old, and I think had I saw the movie in 1980, I would have had an entirely different opinion on it. But I think comedy movies have changed so much since then that, like, even going back and watching, you name it, from the early 80s, I don't know if a lot of them hold up quite as well. And the other one is, Michael, you mentioned it a little bit ago, not just the ending. I thought a lot of the scenes just drug on way too long. Like, mm-hmm. every single music scene I thought was 3 or 4 minutes too long, you know? And I think it's after a while, I'm like, okay, let's get to the end. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because out of all the playbacks that we've done, this is probably the one that I found the least entertaining. Not the worst movie, but the least entertaining.
I want to get your percentage score first. 0 to 100%. 100% being great. What would you give it?
I said 65.
I'm gonna swing it over to Michael before I go, because Michael, you had already seen this, so.
Yep. I knew what I was going into. And it is interesting. I think the that Rotten Tomatoes, like, critics consensus, really sums it up very well. Too over the top for its own good, but ultimately rescued by the cast's charm, director John Landis's grace, and several soul-stirring musical numbers. It is a little outrageous, and I agree with Mark on a lot of the scenes. Kind of like, you know how, like, if you know, the scenes are, they're funny right away, then they go on a little too long, and then they go on just long enough where they're kind of funny again. Like, they kind of reach that point in a few different scenes, like the big all car chases, some of the musical stuff. But really, I think the best parts, like the most funny, like pure comedy bits to me, are at, like, the very beginning, like before they try to put the band together, where it's just kind of the interactions between Jake and Elwood. That's John Belushi's character, Jake, and then Dan Aykroyd's character, Elwood. And their interactions earlier, like with where Jake is, like, coming out of prison, you know, it starts with him being, you know, like, leaving prison after serving 3 years of a 5-year sentence. You know, those interactions, they get in this, like, this rickety old car. They're just talking to each other. We're getting some character development. And I think those scenes are by far the best in the movie. And I think it hits this peak early and drops quite a bit and just stabilizes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are you ranking it out of 100%?
I would absolutely recommend this to someone. If someone asks, like, hey, should I watch The Blues Brothers? I'm like, yeah, you should watch it. It's great. You know, I enjoyed it. I think it's a good movie. I would give it a 70. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, this is strange because I thought I was going to be the only one. I felt like I didn't get this movie. I felt like it went over my head. I was like, why is this so iconic? Like, I think it was one of those movies, and I did notice how many times I didn't laugh, you know, or not how many times I didn't laugh, easier to count how many times I did laugh, which was probably, yeah, like 3 to 4 times. But it was like it was more like a pretty entertaining just to watch, but it wasn't like this laugh out loud comedy I was expecting it to be. And I can't say I didn't enjoy it. It's not a horrible movie. But part of me agrees with Mark where like maybe it just hasn't aged as well. And because it's, you know, from that era, a lot of things are going over my head. But also, I think it's more so a not aged well, because, a movie that was released in 1975, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, that's still really fucking funny to me.
Well, yeah, and there's other movies too that I still think Vacation, National Lampoon's Vacation, is really funny, and that was made in 1980. And you could say like Spaceballs was I think it's a late 80s movie, Coming to America. Those are movies that I still think are funny from the 80s, but I do think a lot of those movies don't age well, especially for people our age.
Well, Airplane and Caddyshack. Too, that's another one. Yep. Airplane and Caddyshack both came out in 1980.
Here's what I want to say. I think there are movies that age well, and I personally don't think this is one of them. I still think Holy Grail is really hilarious, and that movie's gratuitous and sometimes overwrought with bits, you know, where they take it a certain, maybe a bit too far, but it still like really works. Vacation, I still love that movie. I still think that movie's really fucking funny. I think that actually adds to why I was so disappointed that I didn't enjoy this more. I was really expecting, I don't know. I think I think I need to watch it more, but off my first, impression, I was disappointed. I think as far as, like Dan Aykroyd's movies, I far prefer Ghostbusters.
Trading Places. I guess seen that
yeah.
one. That
yeah. Yeah. Good yeah. Yeah. With, Eddie Murphy. I forgot to mention that one when I was talking about his movies. But I'm still giving this one probably what you gave it, Mark, a 65%, a 60 to 65. I think there's merit to watching it. I think I'd recommend people to watch it. I think I just either it didn't age well or it's a product of its time, you know, and that would go along with not aging well, but it may have just flew over my head a little bit. So I was surprised about that.
We didn't grow up with the Belushi era either.
Yeah.
You know, someone like our parents would probably enjoy this a lot more than we did. I also was a little disappointed, too, because going in, it was right away in the movie, I noticed, oh, it's in Chicago. Oh, it's you know, about two brothers. It's a musical, kind of a rock theme movie. I was kind of thinking, not that it was going to be the same plot or anything, but I was kind of getting like a Wayne's World vibe, right? They're both movies with two, in this case, brothers, then two best friends in Wayne's World, a rock theme movie, both set in Chicago, just getting excited. And then it just, I don't know, fell really flat for me. And, just say it. If I never see Blues Brothers again, I'll be all right. I'll be totally fine.
I think I agree with you, Mark, that subjectively.
I hate to, bring it up, but it's going to get brought up at some point sooner or later. How much of this movie's like notoriety now is because of the death of John Belushi? Like, this was the last good movie he was in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was in basically, like, as far as I'm aware, like two like good comedy movies in Animal House and Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Like, how much of that had to do with his death?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, early deaths, it's so hard. I think they definitely, you know, because Jimi Hendrix died young, Chris Farley died young, Kurt Cobain died young. I think it always helps your legacy, right? It sounds morbid, but I think it does nothing but just kind of help your legacy, because you're not alive long enough to, like, tarnish it, really.
Right. People, you know, lament what could have been, you know, that sort of thing, too.
Heath Ledger is another one. So I don't know, Mark, do you agree with that?
Oh yeah. I think it definitely helps in some way. This also is the first, well, I could be wrong, but I think it's the first movie based on an SNL character
or skit.
And probably, with the exception of Wayne's World, probably the most successful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Of SNL one. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Blues Brothers characters were more popular on the show. I honestly never watched the show from the 70s. And that's another thing. If you guys ever go back and watch the SNL 70s, like, you know, there might be a couple skits that are funny, but I don't know. It's just different. I can't really explain it, but it's just like when you weren't around back then, it's like, mm-hmm. you just don't care about it as much. I don't know. This was like, it's hard to explain. Like, I just think that if this movie, and I guess they did make a sequel that was awful, but if this movie was made now, maybe I'd have a different opinion on it. If it had two comedy actors from, like, you know,
if it had Ferrell and John Reilly.
Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. But no, to go back to your question, I definitely think, you know, it kind of his death kind of immortalized him too, especially because at that time it was such huge news, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. I think you make a good point there, though. I think that these were such popular, the Blues Brothers were such popular characters in a skit on SNL that people loved SNL back then.
Yep.
You know, SNL was this new thing. I think that really helped the movie, obviously, right?
Right. And you also need to keep in mind too that not just SNL, but TV in general. If you guys ever want to have your mind blown, go check out stats from, like, viewing statistics from the, like, TV in the 70s compared to now. It's just completely mind blowing because the 70s stats are way higher for viewing ratings than stats now. And obviously that's because of streaming and there were like five channels back then, but like, Belushi was a part of everyone's life back then, right? You know, everyone watched SNL because there were only a couple channels. And it, like you said, Ty, it was such a brand new thing that, you know, like, people hadn't seen comedy like that before. So it's, he was definitely really famous before his death. But I think since then, as time has gone on, it's still kind of kept him immortalized.
Mm-hmm. I would also say that SNL is very much this, like, I don't want to call it generational or even like decade, but like every cast of SNL, I think, holds a special meaning for certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like this thing. You can't watch SNL right now and be like, oh, it's exactly how it was in the 90s. No, every new cast that comes in has their own little identity. And which makes sense. I think if I watch 70s SNL, I don't think I'd find it that funny. And people obviously talk about it a lot because it's like the OG. And then people also talk about the 80s with Eddie Murphy.
Right.
And I've seen some of those and I don't find them that funny.
Same here. Yeah. So, it's kind of like what you grow up with, right? So we're all in our late 20s. So that means we grew up with, I think you guys came up with SNL the same way I did. We would get the DVDs of the best of Chris Farley, best of Dana Carvey, and then you just kind of worked your way up from there. And I think I didn't start watching the show until Will Ferrell, and then kind of going into the Bill Hader, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, that era.
Yeah, I would say that was actually the era we grew up with, but I think we also appreciated the era before with, like, mm-hmm. Adam Sandler, Chris Farley, and eventually, you know what I mean? David Spade.
Right.
Like that era. So
One last thing on SNL. Dan Aykroyd was the Weekend Update anchor back then. And he is the guy that says, Jane, you ignorant slut.
That is
Jane Curtin, which is a very famous Office quote now. The Dwight you ignorant slut. That's where that comes from. That was Dan Aykroyd on Weekend Update. So,
Hey, that's a good gist, so you know.
Fun little tidbit.
Well, let's continue on with this line of questioning. What did you guys think? What was your exposure with Belushi before this movie? And what did you think of Belushi in this movie? What do you think of him in general? Do you think he's overrated? Do you think he's funny? Michael, I'm going to let you start.
So I think basically my only exposure to John Belushi is through Blues Brothers. I have never seen Animal House, and I haven't seen any, like, the old SNL. So it's like, I feel a little lack of authority to answer the question, but I enjoyed him. I thought it was funny. Like I said earlier, I think all of the scenes, especially at the beginning of the movie, where it's just Aykroyd and Belushi just kind of you know, conversing back and forth and being funny that way. I thought those were some of the best scenes in the movie. So yeah, I mean, really, really enjoyed.
I really enjoyed. I don't disagree with you about that. I think those were some of the best scenes. So, yeah. What about you, Mark? What do you think of Belushi?
Well, I think my only exposure was I've seen Animal House once. It's been a while. I did like Animal House better than
Belushi. I liked Animal House too. I would say that's a pretty good movie.
I would say my only exposure before watching I knew he was in the Blues Brothers, but I would say Animal House and probably the iconic poster of him from Animal House and the college sweater. That's in every college dorm room.
Yep.
You know, the one of him chugging the bottle of Jack.
Don't you have a college shirt?
I own that college shirt, and I actually wear it from time to time in the winter. Yeah, thank you for asking. And I think I think what Belushi does too is he has like a little polo underneath it.
Yeah,
so like it's like a white polo on underneath the college sweater, so you can actually wear it at work. Anyway, I don't think he's overrated. I think he's very talented. This isn't a bad movie. I don't want to make it sound like it's a bad movie. I just didn't think it was that funny. And I think I had really high expectations. But I think from this movie, though, I kind of mentioned earlier how he's very talented. I mean, he's a funny dude. He's a very boisterous person. He can sing, dance. You know, he's just a kind of a prototypical SNL player, really. So, yeah, I guess I don't know if that answers your question or not, but he's definitely not overrated in my mind. But I guess I wish his career would have went longer. Sadly, you know, it would have been nice to see what at the end of his career and what different roles he would have had, and if he ever would have tried like a serious role and, you know, like the later end of his career, like some comedic actors do. So I don't know. What do you think of him?
I don't think he's overrated either. Again, I'm kind of like on your wavelength of thinking here. I think this movie is overrated. Maybe it's not overrated. I don't think anybody really claims that this movie is the greatest comedy of all time. You know?
Yeah.
Like I've never seen anybody say, you know, Blues Brothers is like a top 10 comedy movie, you know? So
yeah, I checked some lists and it always ranked in like the 50s, 60s. So that's, suppose that's fair. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, because right now I'm just looking at Ranker, which is like you literally just like click an up arrow or a down arrow, and anybody can do it. You don't even need an account. So Airplane is at the number one spot. And guys, take this with a grain of salt. Literally anybody can do this, and you can spam it, I'm sure. Airplane is number one. Like 3,000 people have up arrowed it. 2,500 people have down arrowed it. And then, but then get this, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is number two. And like almost 4,000 people have upvoted it, but almost 3,000 have downvoted it. So it's like, it must be the differential, obviously, right?
It's a little polarizing.
So then let me just throw some other iconic comedies at you. There's Blazing Saddles is the next one. Nope, Dumb and Dumber. Caddyshack, Office Space, Groundhog Day, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Happy Gilmore, Training. All these movies are indeed, in my opinion, better than the Blues Brothers. I've seen all those movies. Vacation, even Animal House is up there. I actually think Animal House is really fucking funny. That also has Kevin Bacon in it, so can't go wrong. Anchorman, Ghostbusters, we've talked about it. So, Spaceballs. Should I keep going?
No. It's like,
your point has been made.
And here is time. I've seen 72 movies
for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Horns high.
Oh, Wayne's World. Pee-wee's Big Adventure. No, okay. So anyway, I don't necessarily want to turn this into, I'm not trying to shit on the Blues Brothers. I think it's a good movie. I'm not going to go back and watch it. Just like Mark, I'm not going to go back and watch it. But I think that it's a movie worth watching. That sounds so weird, but it's not a bad movie.
Yeah,
Michael, you got to make the point here more, because you actually enjoyed it, and maybe like what? How did you first watch this movie?
My old roommate Andy. is a big fan of it. And so he was like, hey, we're going to watch the Blues Brothers. So I'm like, okay, I guess I've never seen it. So let's do it. And, you know, I think one of the big things, and it sounds like from like your guys' perspective, both of you, is like, it's almost like this movie was a little too hyped up and it was only destined to fail. You know what I mean?
I think that's part of it. Yeah. I think that's part of it.
Where it's like, you know, classic characters, right? The Blues Brothers, the classic look with the hat and the suits and the glasses. And, you know, it's all over the place. It's Blues Brothers is like a very frequent sort of occurring theme. And it's not like frequent in everyday life, but like in comedy spheres and like, you know, like Mark said earlier about like Halloween costumes, that sort of thing. So you see it frequently. You see it a lot more frequently than like probably a lot of the other comedy movies that you were just listing. So I think, maybe I just didn't necessarily have that exposure to get it super hyped up. I didn't have really any expectations the first time watching it. So coming into it the second time, you know, obviously I know what I was getting into. So, I wasn't disappointed.
Mm-hmm. I just think, for one, I think it's one of those I would have to watch again, even though I don't want to, because I got really bored through the middle of the movie. It just came off long to me and just overwrought. I guess that's the best I can say. And I didn't feel like I laughed enough, but, I don't know. It didn't land with me. I'm disappointed about it too.
It is over 2 hours long, which is way too long. I think the initial cut was like more than 2.5 hours long, and it was going to have an intermission. Like back in the day, they were going to put an intermission in this comedy movie.
Oh my God. Serious.
And they cut off like 20 minutes of the movie to, I think, including the credits, it's like 2 hours and 13 minutes or something like that.
Jesus.
Which is, I'm going to say like, I don't know. There's a lot of cruft in this movie. And I think if you condense it to just like a general hour and a half sort of comedy, I think, you know, things look a lot better and it's a lot more of a enjoyable watch.
Yeah. Cause here's the thing, like at the climax of the movie, I was just thinking to myself, this is so fucking long. It's like how are they still running away from all these people?
Yeah. At one point I thought that the movie was about to end, and then I clicked my remote and there was like 45 minutes left. It's like, oh my God, there's like another movie that I have to watch right now on top
but
of that.
It kind of reminded me of the scene in Anchorman, I think 2, where all the news teams like keep coming and keep coming. And then they have that big battle, which is kind of trying to like piggyback off the battle, of course, where Brick kills somebody with a trident in the original. It reminded me of that, where it kept getting like more and more ridiculous. And I could see the comedy in that, but for some reason I didn't find it funny. That's right. Weird.
It just didn't land. And I feel like, yeah.
Go on, Michael.
Well, like the last, those last 45 minutes, right? Like, so they basically end up having this show at this big ballroom where they use all of the proceeds to help pay for those $5,000 that they needed for the school. And then because they're like various events have them wanted by the police because, Elwood escaped the police because of he had like a warrant out or his expired suspended license. Anyway, they're wanted by the cops, so all the cops are here, and then it ends up in this big cop chase. And this cop chase, like literally at the end of the movie, in a different movie, it might be way more funny because it's outrageous, right? Like there's probably like 15 cop car pileups in the middle of Chicago in this comedy movie. It's like, well, I don't know what kind of insane budget they had for it, but like it just kind of drags a little bit. And most of that chase scene felt unnecessary. Like they did the show, they got the money, everything is great. It's maybe like wrap this bad boy up, but kind of was like a little too aggressive at the end.
I think like also is that they were kind of just like, for the most part, deadpanning that part of the movie. You know, like we don't get like these funny lines from either of them during that part. Like if Will Ferrell does a crazy scene like that, at least he's like running around screaming and like, my eyes are on fire. I'm blind. And, you know, like you have things to laugh at while all these ridiculous things are happening. But instead, like it felt like I was expected to laugh at all these, like, you know, first, like the police and then the army. Like that was the funny part, was the buildup. And they weren't doing anything really to add to the comedy, I guess, unless you like really deadpan, like no reaction. Cause they like literally walk into that elevator, like whistling. They go up the elevator, you know, they give the tax money to Spielberg, and then they turn around and all the guns are pointed at them. And then they sing Jailhouse Rock. The movie's over. But, I don't know. I think it was just like, I was expecting them to have more iconic lines or something. You know, and maybe maybe this is just more of a deadpan movie.
Yeah,
I deadpan though. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think it has something to do too with like. I'm going to sound like I'm off the rails here, but almost like we've seen through TV and television, YouTube, you name it, like the craziest shit that comedy has to offer. And like nothing in that movie was like super outrageous to me, but maybe back in 1980, like a nun slapping him with the ruler a lot would have been like, I thought that scene was kind of funny, but like that would have just got roars of laughter. Or like the neo-Nazi thing, which I was not expecting at all, that protest.
That was really interesting. Yeah.
I hate the like, neo-Nazis. You know,
yeah. Like that was funny, but I was like, it's like, I've seen, you know, we've seen collectively, like, you know, every Judd Apatow movie is like has some sort of like ridiculous, over the top, gross scene. It just seemed like, I don't know. It's just like nothing. Like it was nothing was like really edgy comedy. Nothing was. I think there were, you know, a line or two that are now kind of iconic, but I don't know. I don't know. It just didn't click with me at the end of the day, I guess. But
I just to talk through some of this, here's some parts I did find funny. I like when the nun was beating them. That was funny. Mm-hmm. When the nun kept smacking them with the stick and putting the stick between their head and smacking them. And I liked when John Belushi said Jesus H tap dancing Christ. That made me laugh. And then, you know, we of course had this like gospel scene with oh my gosh, let me forget his name. Dude,
James Brown.
Yes, thank you.
Jim Belushi.
Yeah, Jim Belushi, his brother. The we're on a mission from God. That's got to be quoted a lot, right? Because
yeah,
Aykroyd says that.
That's like
all the time.
That's the line of the movie.
Yeah, I think it's that and Elwood saying, "There's 106 miles of Chicago. Yep. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark out, and we're wearing sunglasses."
Yeah,
I like that line. I think that one's kind of iconic as well.
This is also a movie I could see Andy liking. Like, he would really like this movie. Mm-hmm. This is, yeah. I thought the high speed chase in the mall parking lot, and then when they crash into the mall, was funny because they were like making comments about like, oh, they got this here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and they got that there. The initial car chase. There's two extended car chases in this goddamn movie.
I think the first one was by far better because they were actually reacting to it. You know, they were saying like, oh, you know, they're just like nonchalantly commenting about the mall. Like, it's really nice in here.
Which one was the one with Soul Man playing in the background?
I couldn't tell you that.
I'm a soul man.
probably the first one.
I like that one. I love that song, Soul Man. I think that song has held up really well. And, I think that was the first one.
I also like how in that scene he's like, baby clothes, this place has got everything. So that there were some funny lines.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
the black cop who is chasing them throughout most of the movie, I just want to point this out, he is in the X-Files and he is X. He's known as X. So that guy's been around for a long time, and he also doesn't age, but they say black don't crack.
Do they say that? Is that a thing
they say?
They
do say that. Oh, yeah.
That is what they say.
It's 100% a thing they say.
Hey, interesting fact off that. Dan Aykroyd is actually super into UFOs and extraterrestrial shit, and he's been on several podcasts talking about it, including Last Podcast on the Left, one podcast that we enjoy here at Super Metal World.
Yeah, he was just on there not too long ago. It's a really great episode.
Yeah,
he's really interesting. And I always love his accent. It's so funny to me. The Peter Gunn theme when they were playing the
that's what that was called. That was bugging me the entire movie.
Didn't we play that in jazz band?
Yeah.
Should it's fucking blues, man. Can't play. What is jazz is like not the blues, right?
No.
Jazz is jazz.
It's similar.
It's similar, right? A little bit.
I don't know. You know what?
I don't think they're similar.
Let's say similar. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I don't know.
Tomato. Let's just piss a lot of people off and say they're the same. Jazz is the same, right?
Jazz is the same as blues.
It's probably like saying heavy metal is the same as rock and roll, right?
It's probably like to a jazz band, it's probably like saying like the equivalent of like heavy metal is equal to I don't like country or like
I'm gonna throw something out here and I could be entirely wrong. I think so. Blues is like what rock and roll originated from, right? I think blues is like kind of down and dirty and you know kind of like riffs just
I cut my brother in half.
And then jazz, I think, is more just like ad libbing. You know, someone just, you know, take that bass line for a walk there, Jimmy.
Scooby doo, bop, bop, bow.
Yeah. And it's so there's your music lesson from two guys that have no idea what jazz and
blues are. I think I got a better understanding of the blues. I definitely don't understand jazz. I don't even know. I mean, we're doing what we can, guys. I'm not a jazz fan.
A little off topic. Did you know that Tenacious D has like a jazz album? Or not an album, but they did like a jazz song that was like 20 something minutes.
What?
It doesn't surprise me because Jack Black, you know, does all of his weird vocalizations, you know, Jack Blackism.
Look it up on Spotify. It's like a 15-20 minute song, and it's just a jazz song. And they, I went down this rabbit hole of Tenacious D live performances on like late night shows, and they performed this jazz song on like a Craig Ferguson or something, probably 15 years ago. I was like, what the fuck is this? And yeah, it's exactly what Ty said. It's just Jack Black doing a weird sound, and then Kyle Gass busts out the recorder and does some solos. It's just like right up their alley. So funny.
One thing that we didn't mention is that I said John Candy's in this movie, but he also died young. Crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of John Candy I like. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You guys got to see that if you haven't. It's sad and also very funny. Uncle Buck is great. I don't care who you are.
It's a great movie.
That's a great family film. Set your kids down and watch that.
Spaceballs.
Yeah, of course.
Yep.
You know. Okay. So anyway, back to the movie. That scene, the tiny apartment by the train, and he's cooking toast on a coat hanger. I liked that. I thought that was a cool scene. So like you said, I think this movie did start strong now that I'm looking back at my notes a little bit, but my overall feeling is still what I said. And I don't feel like I need to repeat it, 'cause I'm sure people listening are like, we get it. It didn't land for you. Shut the fuck up. Okay. So, another scene I got it just while I'm because I made notes of what made me laugh. I like when he goes back and they're trying to recruit the band, which I had no idea this was going to be a get the band back together kind of movie.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for saying that, because that is one of my favorite tropes and favorite themes in anything is when the band has to get back together.
Kind of a bummer that this didn't work out.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's another.
Here we go again.
Another check mark on our list.
It's a bummer. This movie fucking sucks.
Yeah. And they established that right away in the movie too. It's like, we got to get the band back together. I'm like, fuck yes we do. I don't care what it is. Just get back together.
I had no idea it was going to be that kind of movie. So it's that scene where Murph and the Magic Tones are playing, and they have like that red shag look to their on the drum set and everything, and they're all wearing red and like monkey suits, and they're playing jazz. And one of the members of Murph and the Magic Tones says, "You got that money you owe us, motherfucker." I thought that was funny. I don't know. There was some scenes that made me laugh. Any other scenes sticking out for you guys? I don't want to be the only one going through scenes. So, you know, things worth talking about, scenes worth talking about, because I got more to talk about, but I want to swing it to you guys.
I mean, the scene in the diner where they try to go get... Is it the guy who's like, his name is like Guitar? He plays guitar?
Yeah. I made a note of that. I was like, his nickname is Guitar?
Like lame nickname. Alan Guitar or something. They go into the diner to order some food so that, because they know their old guitar player for, he's an old member of the band. He's working as a cook at this diner, which happens to be like his wife's establishment. And they sit down and they're ordering food, and Elwood asks for toast, white bread toast that is dry. Don't put anything on it. And Jake orders, is it two or three chicken?
It's four. Four. It's actually four.
Four? Yeah. He orders
four whole
fried chickens and a Coke. And like that entire interaction is I think one
that
of my
is pretty
favorites
good.
In the entire movie. She's like, "You want anything to drink?" He's like, "Yeah, a Coke." Then she goes she goes back to the kitchen. And she shouts at Guitar. He shouts, we got two honkies out there dressed like Hasidic diamond merchants. They look like they're from the CIA or something." And just, I think that entire interaction is really good. And it goes into a Aretha Franklin song. And just things are great. I love everything in that diner.
I think that's a good scene, too. I just need to say, though, the technology for lip syncing was not there yet.
No,
it was not there. It looks
horrible.
Did not
age well. Yeah,
it looks horrible. Like their lip syncing is so bad.
Yeah,
it's her song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely her song.
Aretha, lip sync your own damn song correctly. But
I think
the name
of the song is called "Think."
Yeah, I think that was a good scene. I will agree with you on that. I did write down, that was one of the things I wrote, was four fried chickens and a Coke and the dry toast. That was pretty funny. And she's like, "Do you want anything to drink?" He's like, "No, ma'am." He just wants dry toast for whatever reason. So
same thing he was trying to make with that coat hanger.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Mark? Is there any like scenes that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I like that scene as well. I do think it's funny how they kept the same outfit on the entire movie, especially because they were in like these insane car chases where they're jumping over bridges and shit, and they're still in the suit and the hat and the sunglasses. It's just funny to me that they managed to just keep them on the entire time and like not get a scuff on them. That was kind of funny to me. As far as scenes go, I thought all the scenes with Carrie Fisher were just sort of outrageous and kind of funny because she has like the fucking heat seeking rocket launcher that she fires at him. And then she has like this like machine gun, and she has like,
she's got a flamethrower.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like
every
remote controlled explosives.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is going on with this? I think she's actually called Mystery Woman on the, in the cast, I think that's her title. She's credited with Mystery Woman. And the first one cracked me up the most, though, because I was like they have the technology in 1980?
Just a bazooka?
Carrie Fisher has this fucking heat-seeking bazooka? It's like, oh, man. You guys mentioned quite a few of them that I thought were funny. I think one part that made me laugh near the end was... For one, all these people showed up at this auditorium, and the only reason they know that this band's playing, a band they've never heard of, is because the Blues Brothers were driving around on in this raggedy-ass cop car with this, like, jerry-rigged megaphone, you know, and they were just saying like, hey, concert tonight at 8 p.m. Palace Theater.
$2.
Yeah, it's just packed in there. But the part I liked is when they were a little bit late, the crowd was literally chanting, "We want the show! We want the show!" And that cracked me up, thinking like, if like Guns N' Roses came on late and like all the fans were chanting, "We want the show! We want the band!" It's like, who does that? That was so funny.
I do love that promoting before the internet. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it was done, I'd imagine. Other than that, I liked Dan Aykroyd's dance moves a lot, and I think they'd be really funny to learn for like a wedding dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? He's just kind of gangly, and the leg kicks that he does. My question for you guys, did you guys like Aykroyd or Belushi better in this movie? Because I liked Aykroyd better. I don't know. He kind of clicked with me a little better.
Ah, man, that's tough. I think
both were solid. They had a good tandem, but
I think they're really on par with each other, but it's a toss up for me. I think my gut wants to say Aykroyd as well. I appreciate his style of humor in the movie, but also, no, I'm going to give it to Belushi. Fuck it. I think Belushi was a little better. His physical comedy, mm-hmm. just a little better for me. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, I was going to give it to Belushi for those exact reasons. Like, I was just thinking about, I didn't think about that until just now. And it's like, I think they are like very, very close. But I think, yeah, Belushi's, you know, physical comedy is... it's pretty lights out.
Yeah, yeah. I also want to... did you guys find it funny when they were trying to get that guy from the band? He was the maitre d' at that fancy restaurant. And he was like, "Guys, this place is expensive." I'm paraphrasing, by the way. "The soup is $10. I was like, $10, walls? Like, that's not expensive.
I didn't catch
soup.
That.
Like, it's a fancy restaurant. Like, okay, $10 for soup is expensive today. Mm-hmm. But if you went to a fancy ass restaurant, like, I don't know, I don't think that's that expensive.
And in 1980, nonetheless, too.
Like, that was a fine dining restaurant, right?
Right. Yes. Like, everyone was in tuxedos, you know, the you got Pee Wee Herman bringing you out champagne.
Yeah. And the Dom Perignon, it was 120 in the movie. Mm-hmm. And, today it's anywhere between $175 to $200.
Yep.
So a little inflation for you, but I like the whole like I'm a big fan of like fish out of water type scenes, and I did like that restaurant scene a little bit too because they were like, you know, fish out of water in that instance. But I think one thing that was really weird about that scene that would not age well today with like PC culture is when he was like, he turns to that family and he's like, wanting to sell, he's like, "How much for your children? How much for your women?" And like, and he's like, why was he? I know they were like putting on an act to like make people in the restaurant upset to try to get the guy to like agree mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. you know, they're putting pressure on him so he would agree to join the band again. But at one point, Belushi turns around and he smacks the guy in the back or whatever. He's like, "Yo, how much for your wife?" And it's like, really weird.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really good.
Yeah,
how like much for the little girl.
Yeah, what the fuck was up with that? That was weird. You know, just like today, I think people would be like, "That brings to mind sexual trafficking, so therefore that is not funny." You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, Vice.com. Yeah.
There would have been an article on it somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, Vice. Sure. Vice.com. Some woke hipster blogger. Tear it a new one.
Other than that, I think a couple other scenes I want to mention. The Ray Charles scene I think was pretty good. I like when Belushi said $2,000 for this chunk of shit. He's talking about the piano. It was funny. I don't understand why Ray Charles pulls out a gun and shoots at a child.
That was a little weird.
I don't know why
there
happened.
There was like a little kid trying to like steal a guitar. He just pulls out a gun.
He's blind. Yes.
Yeah. So to that, like, did I mean, he not?
That's the joke, I guess. But
you know, I give him credit too for kind of poking fun at himself, because there's a scene where he's like hanging up the, like, the band's getting back together poster, right? Their final concert, and he hangs it up upside down.
That's funny.
What if no one told him? Yeah.
What if no one he just handed the poster to him upside down? Yeah. No one told Ray it's Charles. Like,
yeah, Ray, smile and then do this.
Yeah, right. He didn't even know.
Yeah.
The shake your tail feather lip sync thing, that was pretty interesting. I kept thinking of the Nelly song, Shake Your Tail Feather.
Yeah.
So I was like, I didn't realize this was a phrase before Nelly made it a phrase. So, and during that, I was thinking, how many weird ass dance moves were there in the 70s? Because they were like, do the monkey, do the mashed potato, do the watsu, do the this, do the. I was like, that must have been a 70s thing. Like, we got all these like names for dance moves. Mm-hmm. Even Johnny Bravo does the monkey.
Yeah.
You know, the cartoon? Do the monkey with me. Oh, of
the mashed potato. That's in the song Twist, right?
Yeah.
Mashed potato.
Must have just been a popular time for naming dance moves. Because can you think of many like do the this? I guess there are some things, right?
I mean, now I think Fortnite has probably just reinvented hundreds of different dances.
Yeah, this is my life, actually. I'm a teacher. I should mention that before that sounded creepy. I teach children, and yeah, Michael subbed it up. There's like a new Fortnite dance every year those are really funny, because I kind of get them. I kind of understand these dances before like you guys do, and then you guys figure them out before, say, someone 10 years older than you do, right? Or like your parents do. So like dabbing, for instance, that's not a dance, it's kind of a fad, but dabbing was dead. Like, dabbing's dead now, thank God. But like flossing, for instance, flossing is popular like 2 years ago, and people still do it. But now like flossing's kind of on the way out, and it's like, I'm going to throw some names you won't get, but like the Orange Justice and the hype is a big one. You guys know the hype?
No. What's the hype? So
the hype is, Orange Justice is hard to explain without showing you, but the hype is, let's say you're standing on your left leg and you put your arms down at your sides, and at the same time you kick your right leg and your arms forward, 1, 2, 3, and then you bring your right arm up in the air and you go 1, 2, 3 again, kicking your right leg and your right arm.
You lost me.
You guys see that one?
Sounds complicated. I think I know what you're talking about, though.
So
to watch one a YouTube leg. Video on
yeah, it. Just go. Yeah, watch the YouTube video.
You know,
but yeah, to answer your question, though, there's no new, like, those are like kid dance phrases. I don't feel like there's any, you know, the twist or the jitterbug and shit like that. Like those aren't really that much of a thing anymore, I have a feeling.
Like, honestly, like the one from our era was like Soulja Boy.
Soulja Boy, yep.
Like you.
A big one now is so TikTok is really popular with the kids, and there's a big one on TikTok called Hidden the Woe. I'm just losing you guys. I just know it.
Just completely lost right now.
It's so stupid. Like when you hit the whoa, basically, or no, it might be a Snapchat thing actually. Basically, someone in your Snapchat like tosses you something, right? Like you fake toss something in the air, and then the person receiving the Snapchat has to like catch the whoa and do this little like twist thing with their arms, and it's like a game, and it's so dumb.
I'm you know, like,
we're too old for this shit.
Yeah, it's.
I'm already over it.
I want to mention a couple other parts from the movie I enjoyed.
Let's move on from this topic, please.
So I kind of liked when they went to that country music bar and they were forced to play country music. So they started singing like Stand By Your Man and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Just a little note. I like when they were talking to that guy in the sauna and then it's revealed that the whole band was actually in the sauna. Pretty funny. And Dan Aykroyd at one point in the movie says, "Who are you going to call?" And I was like, "What?" And I was like, "What?" And then, Ghostbusters came out 4 years after this.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think he wrote Ghostbusters.
Okay. Well, you know, I think the original, like, you know, script, the initial, like, manuscript for this movie was, like, over, like, it was over 200 or 300 pages. So Aykroyd was probably working on it for a long time. I wonder if he was working on Ghostbusters at this time. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's, like, a far-fetched sort of thing. And if it was, like, a reference.
Well, he could have been. I mean, yeah. Well, because, like, you know, like I said, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis were the ones who wrote the original Ghostbusters. So, I mean, he could have easily been working on it at this time, you know? Mm-hmm. I think he had that idea for a while. I think he talks about that, actually, on the last podcast on the left a little bit. And then the other thing is I did like, for one, I thought John Candy could have been in this more. I love John Candy. His part was pretty small. But I
he
like when
just
he
like
says,
the
like,
police chief, right?
Yeah. I like when they crash into that semi and he says car 55 in the truck. He's just like, I can't remember what he gets on the intercom and he says like, "Hey, we're in a truck right now." So, cause they crash into it. But anyway, those are kind of the like memorable moments for me. If I've missed anything, fill it in, guys. But like I said, going back through that, this is definitely a movie that I would never tell you not to watch if you're curious about it. Just didn't land for me. Which, hey, is that new news at this point? I got to ask this question, though, because you mentioned it, Mark. I know how this is going to go. So let's ask it to Michael.
Okay.
Michael, is this movie better than Wayne's World? Me and Mark, we already know what our answers are.
No, I don't think it is.
Do you have any particular thoughts you want to add to why you think Wayne's World's better, maybe? Or why you like it more?
Well, I think it's funnier. Or like Wayne's World is funnier. I mean,
it's more punchliney,
it's
right?
It's true though. Yeah,
there's a lot. Yeah, there is a lot more like one-liners. There's a way more one-liners in Wayne's World. I feel like maybe I relate to it a little bit more.
Yeah,
I also think I like Mike Myers' comedy more than Aykroyd's or Belushi's.
Yeah.
Like his like
and Carvey. Carvey
type. Yeah. I think I'm just like more into their style of comedy than Aykroyd and Belushi. I'd say that's I like Wayne's World more.
Yeah, and I mean, Mark, I'll let you off the chain. What do you clearly you like Wayne's World more. But why?
Well, Michael summed it up really well. I think Michael saying he related to it more is kind of exactly how I feel as well. With that, though, I think Wayne's World is much more into like the rock and like the live music scene of Chicago. And though the Blues Brothers obviously did have that in their movie a lot, the music in Wayne's World, like, I connected with more. And I think in the Blues Brothers, I thought I was going to get more of that vibe, not like this alternative rock that I got in Wayne's World, but I was expecting it to be more of like a rock movie, I think.
Sure.
And that sounds dumb to say because it's the Blues Brothers, right? But I was just expecting it to be a little more like a Wayne's World vibe. I didn't get that. And I also think that I like Mike Myers and Dana Carvey better than Aykroyd and Belushi. They're, you know, two actors that I grew up watching and loving. Rob Lowe, I think, was a solid third guy in that movie. I don't think the Blues Brothers benefited from that. I think the Blues Brothers was just those two and no one else, right? Where Wayne's World had more cameos and Wayne, you know, well, not more, shouldn't say more cameos, but Wayne's World.
Well, even had Farley was in
there. Yeah. You know, you had Farley and just, I don't know. I had Wayne's World just piqued my interest a lot more. We'll put it that way.
I will say that I think Wayne's World is also more quotable and it had lines that people still say today.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, this is part of the Blues Brothers just maybe being older, but I don't know if there's that many lines other than the look of the Blues Brothers. I think obviously people still dress up like them, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're on a mission from God. That's got to be still quotable in some circles, But you don't. I don't think I could. I think I can go up to a lot of people and be like, "Schwing," and they'd be like, "Ha ha ha!"
It's a great, great laugh that they did.
But they would do that. Yeah.
My friends secretly hate me, and they have to fake their laughs around me. But like, if you went up to somebody and said, "Guys, we got to do this. We're on a mission from God," they'd be like, okay, Ty, okay. When did this become super religious decision?
Ty, we need to meet the talk.
That'd be like your cool comedy friends, you could say that, right? Around, right? Like, right. Oh, yeah, you've watched Blues Brothers, you know? Whereas I think Wayne's World has more like lines that you could say to a lot of people, you know, and they would yeah. get it. Maybe they wouldn't know it was from Wayne's World originally. But anyway, that's my thoughts on that.
No, yeah, I absolutely agree.
This is the first movie too that, and this will be kind of a little plug here for our other playbacks, but this is the first movie that, or playback episode we've done that, you know, isn't one that we've seen over and over again and love, right? We've done The Hangover, a classic comedy that we all love. Pick a Destiny, right? We all love that movie. Walk Hard, Spinal Tap, Wayne's World, School of Rock. These are movies we've seen a ton and we know at the back of our hand, and most of those movies are like critically acclaimed, with the exception of The Pick of Destiny, but that's, you know, a cult thing, cult classic. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. like all of those other comedies are like probably in that ranker list in the top 25.
Yeah. Right? And there's more to come.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's I don't know. It was the first movie the first episode rather that I didn't know anything about it going in other than the look. And
I'm glad we did it.
I am too.
I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I can say it because I am a big comedy nerd and I'm going to eat it up.
Yeah. And can I ask this question too? Because this is a movie where I'm like, I can't believe I've never seen it before. Like, do you guys have any movies where like, I mean, I know you guys have seen a movie like, let's say Star Wars, but like, do you have any movies where it's like, oh, you've never seen that? Like, how have you never seen that before? You know, like I was, Forrest Gump was that way for a while. I don't think I saw Forrest Gump until I was like 20 or something. You know, like some iconic movie you've never seen, like Shawshank Redemption or.
Right.
I got a lot of them. I don't watch any movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Jaws or E.T. or.
Godfather.
Yeah.
I would say Michael would be the king of that list. I haven't seen the Godfather movies. One, because they're always just so long, and every time I want to watch it, I'm like, it's so long, though.
Yeah, it's a commitment.
I'm so 2019.
This is why people hate millennials.
I don't have time to watch one of the greatest movies ever. I haven't seen
Citizen, it. Citizen Kane?
never seen that one.
We should
do a playback on Citizen Kane and just shit on it, because we're all going to hate it, because it's me. The 60s or something.
I think Jaws is a big one for both me and Michael. I mean, that's one that I think a lot of people have seen. Like, E.T. is a big one. Like, Michael, that's crazy. You haven't seen that. Like,
yeah, I haven't seen it.
I'm going to call up your dad and be like, what kind of childhood did you give your son? You didn't make your son watch E.T.
Well, I grew up with Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty awesome. Clockwork Orange. Haven't seen that. Have any of us seen that?
Yeah.
I watched the first 20 minutes of it.
And I had to leave. Like, you didn't like it? Or
no, I had to go do a thing.
Oh, okay.
The way I said that doesn't make sense. But yeah,
it was too graphic.
I was only given the opportunity to watch the first 20 minutes of it.
I mean, Hobo with a Shotgun, that's one that you got to see. No, I'm kidding.
That's a classic.
That movie is fucking crazy. I think, gosh, it's hard to say, like, that always comes up in conversation and then you forget about it later. Like, you haven't seen The Wizard of Oz, or you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, you know, like, mm-hmm. I feel like I can't think of one right off the top of my head. I feel like Titanic. How about Titanic? Have we seen Titanic?
I've seen Titanic.
Okay. See, that would be crazy if you hadn't seen Titanic, right? I mean, that was like, came out while we were growing up, and it's like one of the greatest movies of all time. Like, I think it's kind of overrated personally. Titanic fans. Especially Danielle, because I'm sure she likes that movie and she's listening.
Those rabid Titanic fans.
Pay me like one of your French girls. Are there rabid Titanic fans?
I doubt it.
I think there's rabid Leo fans, right? Like if you're a fan of Leo.
One of my cousins growing up was obsessed with the Titanic, both the film and the boat. Like he would make Titanic models out of paper.
Oh my God.
And like, wow. Yeah, he was real into it. So yeah. There is at least one rabid Titanic fan out there.
Some of the first boobs ever saw in a movie, Titanic.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I remember my sister loved it. My mom really loved it too. I remember like we had the movie and there was like, you know how we had VHS. Yeah. There was like four of them or two of them at least. It was like
a fucking
good fucking Lord.
Brick. Multiple bricks.
I think another one would be Pulp Fiction. That would be like a, you haven't seen that, you know, like kind of The Dark Knight. That's one of our era.
Yeah.
That would be totally crazy to not have seen. I pulled up our friendly ranker list again.
See, you know what we're doing right now is we're just naming really popular movies.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings.
Guys, we're at the end, guys. We're at the end. Let me just say that. Let me save them from this. We are done talking about the Blues Brothers. This is kind of the wrap up part of it. So if you want to tune us out, that's great. If you want to hear us ramble about movies,
Avengers,
just stop listening right now. Just turn it off.
We're at the bottom.
Go away.
We don't expect any of you are left. I actually expect that Mark and I have turned off many people already by not liking Blues Brothers.
Yeah. We kind of shit on it right away, but
yeah, but I mean, you gotta be honest, right?
Yeah. The thing is like, we didn't like it that much. We had high expectations. It fell flat. Still respect it. You should watch it at least once if you haven't seen it. It's a movie, especially with Belushi and Aykroyd. They're pioneers of comedy. They really, I mean, they're huge influences to, you know, not just the guys from the Farley era, but they're influences to comedic actors we see today. So mad props to them, but just didn't care for the movie.
Yeah, for Mark and I, it didn't land, but I agree with Mark on all those points. I think a lot of people would find enjoyment in this movie. Just don't think it wasn't our variety of comedy, I guess, right off the bat. So, I mean, take that or leave it, I guess. But anyway, we'll wrap it up now, guys. Fuck it. We'll do this again. We typically do this once a month. Summer got busy for us, and we ended up skipping, I think, August. We didn't do a playback, but we'll definitely do one in October. Maybe we will nut up and all watch a horror movie because I hate horror movies, and I know Michael does. Mark, what's your opinion on a horror movie?
Not a fan.
So we all hate it.
I have to be with like, God, I sound like such a puss. I have to be with people. I can't watch certain horror movies alone. So
maybe there's like a really light horror movie we will all watch in the spirit of Halloween.
Yeah. Like Casper the Friendly Ghost. Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin.
The hit Nickelodeon TV show, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Or Halloween Town? Remember Halloween Town?
Oh, yeah, that was my shit.
You should watch Halloween Town.
What about that one with the witches? The Three Witches?
Oh, God. Yes.
Oh, it's fucking... Hold on.
I'm going to Google it right now. Three Witch movie.
Don't tell me.
Bewitched?
Oh, no. I got it. It's Hocus Pocus.
God damn it. Hocus Pocus.
Anyway, maybe... I mean, I'm thinking maybe a little heavier affair than that.
Yeah, probably heavier than Hocus Pocus.
I think we're not going to do The Exorcist, okay? But I think... we'll try to find something that we all can watch because we're all just not fans. But I think it'll also be entertaining because we're not fans, right? And you guys want to hear that. You want to hear us talk about something that kind of scares us a little bit and we're unfamiliar with. So expect something like that in October. I'm keeping my word. Expect that in October. Okay. Expect some kind of scary affair. So anyway, you can find us www.supermetalworld.com. Thanks so much. You can find all of our other podcast episodes. We have a lot of blogs up there written by all of us, really, about a variety of topics in the hard rock, the heavy metal sphere. We do have a couple like oddball ones. I mean, Mark's written about baseball. I've written about Adam Sandler. So there's a couple things like that there too. We're available anywhere you stream a podcast. Please follow us, subscribe, rate, review, share with a friend. And follow us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just search Super Metal World. It is a pleasure to bring this to you week in and week out. We're coming up on 2 years here very soon. So time flies. Horns high.
Horns high.